Hello and welcome to In the Lane, a Miami Heat and NBA podcast brought to you by the great people at Anchor. Sean, Summer League action, Las Vegas, baby. 104 degree heat in the middle of night.
I love it. I'm glad you got to go. I wish I could have been there. I was living through, you know, you and other people that got to make it out to the desert, and definitely on my list next year, try to plan my summer around it rather than trying to squeeze it in at the last minute. So what was it like? What was your, I mean, we got good, any good stories that we can tell the listeners? You know, we'll keep it PG-13 or PG if we want to go that route. Any good experiences from Vegas?
Ran down Bam in the middle of a parking lot and kind of an uncomfortable, you can't really see me because it's too dark outside way. You know what I mean? I do want to say that this episode is coming live from my backyard. So we're going to do everything we can to kick out some noise, but be prepped for that. Dude was just kind of standing there talking to his agent, talking to, I think, somebody from the Summer League event planning. And I just told him, congratulations on the Olympics, man. I would love a picture, socially distanced, of course. So I look like I'm the same height as you. That's cool. Bam's 7 inches taller than me. We are not the same height. But that was one of the neatest things that happened. Outside of that, getting stuck at Charlotte for 6 hours and finding a good taco place was a pretty cool experience.
One of my favorite spots in the Charlotte airport. I've been through there for a lot of connections. What was the experience of Vegas like? Like, I've never been there during Summer League. I've heard it's just, you know, kind of like a basketball fans paradise because the two gyms are essentially walking distance from each other, right? You can just kind of bounce back and forth between the gyms.
Yeah, it's a culture piece that I'm definitely going to write about for sure. There's an interesting dynamic of everyone just kind of meshing together. You have agents, media, press, event planners, team, right? Like coaches and assistant coaches and scouts, all of that meshes together in the same arenas and the same staging areas. There's a few credentialed members that get special access, right? So you can be closer to the team. If you play with the team or coach for the team, you're on the bench, but anybody else one level removed, which is a lot of people that we know, are interacting in the same space. And the Cox Pavilion, especially since it's more like an AAU high school arena, it's just stands on two sides. And like you said, you can walk from one to the other. So depending on what kind of experience you like, or if you kind of want to blend the two, you can go from a high school setting where you're watching your favorite team into a basketball arena where they're doing flex cams. But the most interesting part is just the mesh. For instance, a player literally got done with their game in Summer League, got their jersey put away, and then hopped the stanchion, came into the arena seats with us and sat down and watched the game and talked shit for like 20 minutes. And I won't bring up the player's name just to save him some face, but he just talked shit about everybody for 20 minutes. And it was incredible. It is a basketball haven. And it's really cool for that mess just to happen in the arena.
Yeah, very cool. It's definitely something that's on my list that I want to do, hopefully next summer. I've checked it out, watched it. Even going back to when it was in Orlando and that was like a private event. I don't think public was allowed to go there. Obviously there's other summer leagues in Sacramento, but in Utah, but you know, I think the Vegas experience, because of, you know, everything else around it, the experience of Vegas itself, it's definitely something I think all basketball fans at some point should probably check out.
I'm a fan of Josh Christopher literally because of Vegas and his family. Josh Christopher's family is the best. They were in the stands going ballistic. They made me a fan. It's a unique experience, man, where you fans are interacting with media members and just kind of hustling and bustling, talking back and forth. It was really unique.
All right. So, Tony, what did you see? You got to see one Heat Summer League game when you were there?
Yeah, I got one live game. I missed the second one by literally 8 hours. I was really disappointed, but I had to come home.
So seeing it in person, what were your, you know, reactions, thoughts, anything related to, you know, what we got going on with our Heat roster on the Summer League?
Well, immediately, the first thing that comes to mind is just how actually offensively skilled Omer is, right? Watching him play is really interesting because he just looks like a man amongst the boys. Strus has that feel too, which are some of the things that you're looking for in those Summer League guys that are going to be on roster, right? we kind of talked about Tyler going to summer league so he could test out skills that he was going to use in the offseason. This is what we would have wanted to see. Him clearly being a step further and better than the other players that he's going against. Omer's one of those guys immediately. When you're watching summer league ball, he just looks more impressive than the person he's playing against. And you know who else does that really, really well? Garrett. Garrett physically on the court is imposing to the person that he's defending. You'll see them come off the ball quicker if he's coming to pick them up, right? The ball will leave their hands fast. A lot of what you see in person is some of the physicality and strength of these guys that you might not pick up on a broadcast because of the camera angle. Those two dudes look really, really ready to play basketball. I'm excited to see what the team does with that second two-way option because I do think they have some choices they have to make with it. But watching the team live, they play an interesting brand of offensive basketball. It's not always the most coordinated, right? But they play together. When it clicks really well, but it's led by defense first. And I think it's a good test because this team in the major leagues is going to be led by defense first. So if you can excel here in summer league, you got a pretty good chance to excel in the Miami Heat.
Yeah. You know, starting at the top, you know, with Omer, he's definitely impressed. He's seemingly continued to get better, maybe not statistically every game better, but showing things that maybe we didn't know that he could do. You know, like one thing was the last game showed that he could go over his right shoulder and shoot it with his left hand, like a little baby hook in the lane. He's been able to go to both shoulders, which is pretty impressive for a young big man like that. He's also shown the ability, obviously, to protect the rim, shot blocking shots, his timing. Still a little slow-footed, but he has shown at times. There was a game earlier this week where he jumped out and trapped at the end of the game, and I thought that was very impressive. So I pumped the brakes a little bit in terms of whether or not he's going to be able to jump right into the rotation immediately. I posed a question today on my Twitter timeline about, you know, there's 96 minutes between the center and power forward spot. And so when I keep seeing people say Omer should play 8, 10, 12, 14 minutes, that's great. It's, you know, it's a nice little number. It sounds like nothing significant, you know, just throw them out there. But then you have to consider Bam, PJ, Markieff, Dedmon, potentially Jimmy playing small ball four. That's not even mentioning KZ and Udonis, who you would assume you can give 0 minutes to unless you're a crazy person that really still believes in KZ. And we'll get to that in a second. But it's one of those things where it's not that I don't like Omer. I really like Omer. I just don't see how he fits into the rotation in any real, like, consistent way.
It's hard to be unsensational about this because when you talk about that component specifically, I completely agree, right? But if you clip me just talking about the summer league product and Omer, it sounds like I'm maybe pushing him to start or get minutes or something ridiculous. But the truth is I'm just literally talking about his game at summer league and my experience watching him. He looks like he's an NBA player. And then you get to the NBA and everybody in the NBA is an NBA player. And I think we both agree, just not there defensively.
It's like he's passed the first test, you know, him and Strus is in the same boat, I think. And I think Garrett is also in that grouping. They've passed the first test. They've made it through, whether it's a two-way contract, G League, come to summer league. They've shown that they are just a step in kind of a tier above everybody else. And the next step now is you're going to spend the fall doing workouts. You're going to spend the fall with our Heat coaching staff. You're going to get into training camp. You're going to get into preseason. And then there's going to be a certain date where when the first game starts, now it's for real. And as it gets more and more real, the minutes are going to get shorter and shorter into the regular season. And then obviously, as you get into the playoffs, it shrinks even more. It's not that I don't want to see Omer out there. But I guess I weigh in a certain way that let's say he's not consistently getting minutes, which I don't think is going to be the case. I just don't see how there's minutes for him unless he continues to grow. Is it better for him to spend time in Sioux Falls where he can play 30 plus minutes a night every single night although it's against lesser competition? Or is it better for him to be with the big time team, practicing with them, even if he's not playing big minutes? It's that kind of the debate of, is there value in practice or does it have to be in games? How, where can you get better quicker and more efficiently? And I don't know the answer, but I value a lot of the game. And I think that, you know, you look at Max Strus, who spent some time in the G League, you look at Duncan, Kendrick, on down the line, those guys spent some time in the G League, and that's what ultimately made them better. I just don't know if this team has time to be patient waiting for the Omers and KZs to get back to, you know, or get to where they need to be to have a rotation spot.
Yeah, well, they don't need to, right? Like, the thing that we're afforded this year is three potential all-stars playing on the same team. Why do they need to force these guys into a rotation right now? You know, we filled in the gaps of not having a scorer at times in those third quarters. We can stagger all of our all-stars to play in the court at one time. This is a unique situation too this year. I wonder how you'll see this. Summer League stacked. I mean, these teams have real talent, and there's a couple guys on every squad that could really be on an NBA team, which leads me to believe that the G League this year might be a little more stacked than we're used to seeing. These guys might get poached in the middle of the year by competing teams, and we might see a lot more two-way contracts moving and getting picked up. There's a lot of good players in the league right now. That's another thing from Summer League that I meant to say is this guy, the talent's deep. This was a great draft, and the talent is really deep. So I agree with you. I think the move might be just to send him to the G League, if not for getting time with the ball in his hands, which he still needs, but he's going to be playing better offensive players.
And at least you know you have him should emergency happen. Should someone get hurt, should someone get COVID, you have a guy that I feel more confident in Omer than I ever did in Precious. Even before I got to see Precious, you know, even though he was a first round pick. And I know right now people are reacting to him catching transition dunks and making three-pointers. I saw 62 games of Precious. I feel like I know who he is, and I think he can be okay in the league. But I feel Omer's more polished, especially on the offensive end, obviously. That's, to me, going to translate. It fits a lot better next to Bam. Precious is a hell of an athlete. He plays really hard. He's got a great motor. Defensively, he's good. But that fit next to Bam and the willingness for Spo to play him next to Bam never seemed to be there, where, to me, eventually, potentially, I guess, Omer seems to fit a lot better next to Bam. What are you getting off of Omer, talking about Max Strus? Because he seems like a guy that we almost need to be in the rotation, because we have this, if we have one glaring hole, it's either at small forward or point guard off the bench.
Well, you had said earlier, you thought Max Strus kind of proved that he made that first step, where I think he proved that he made that first step in the season last year. His problem was just not following through with his shot and not always getting his legs underneath him when launching from his base. And that stroke looks really consistent right now. And it could just be because he's confident because the players he's going up against, but he looks in that zone where if we have to play him for 12 minutes, 15 minutes, which I think we do, he can come in and be a consistent offensive option. And he is stout, man. That's another thing about that dude that I didn't know. When you look at him live in real play, he's a big guy. Like, he's got a lot of size on him. He's not the best defender though, but sometimes all you just need is enough physicality to, you know, interact and be a good on-ball defender. I think Max is going to be that real nice piece that will accompany Duncan minutes well when Duncan's one of our only scoring options on the floor. Max is really going to help when Jimmy goes to the bench. And if both of them can attack off the cut too, I mean, Duncan's talked a lot about adding a second, you know, a pump fake into a step up into like a two dribble move, one dribble move. If he has that and Max can attack the basket and attack from range, we have different ways to play and different quarters with different lineups. We're a versatile, offensively talented team. And that's why I'm not as concerned about the depth as some other people on the internet are concerned about the depth. I think as long as we staggered the guys correctly, we'll be okay. But when injury happens, because it will, it's an inevitability, that's when things get tough.
Yeah, so I would agree with you about the depth. It doesn't concern me that much. I don't think you can predict injury or COVID-related things. Those are just things that happen along the way. There's going to be injuries. There's probably going to be COVID things, but you can't. I mean, you build the best roster. You know, you're not thinking, oh, we're not going to need depth, so we'll just fill the back end of our roster with, you know, guys that we know can't play. You're trying to build the best 15-man roster no matter what. When you're looking at Max and Duncan and Tyler, all three are very good shooters, probably our three best shooters alongside, obviously, Kyle. But they all do things very differently. I think that's the one thing that hopefully people have realized if they've watched Max. It was lazy analysis to compare him to Duncan. Duncan is very good movement, catch and shoot, or catch one dribble shoot, but very rarely does he put the ball on the floor, okay? Max is much better off the bounce. Tyler is better than both of them off the bounce, but Max has shown an ability to, in a way, run like Duncan, not the same level, but movement shooter, but also put the ball on the floor and create. And like you mentioned, his size or his strength in using that physicality that neither Tyler or Duncan have. So we have three different, very different shooters. And I think the combination of them allows us to do different things. And I think they're all going to be involved for that reason, because Max is probably potentially the best defender of the group.
I would say so. Yeah.
And as he gets more accustomed, because of his strength, he's going to be able to defend a couple different positions, not up necessarily. None of them can really guard fours, but it's one of those things that I think he fits. I think that he's pretty clearly the backup three at this point. And how well he plays in those minutes is going to determine how many minutes he gets, if that role is going to expand or it's going to be very minimal.
Hey guys, at 2-for-1, we pride ourselves on consistency and reliability. Just kidding. We kind of pride ourselves on just making stuff work as we go. And this episode was a little bit of a cluster. I was outside. The internet kept going out because I was too far from the router. We did the best we could. My inputs get changed here, so my audio quality is going to dip. And while some of you might hate the sound of my voice and love this new quality, some of you might not. I do apologize. Hopefully we can bear through it. Next episode will be better. I will have stuff sorted. Thank you for listening, by the way. On with the show.
Well, he's definitely the most stout defender out of the three, and he's going to have to be, because he needs to be the guy that can come off the bench for Jimmy and pick up a wing defender or a wing assignment. He's going to be a super crucial part to this rotation, but that just goes to show you, right? Like, Max being a pretty integral part of the team means that there's some depth issues at wing that kind of scare me about the injury bug. That kind of puts into perspective where the two ways have to go, right? So when you look at those, we kind of already both agree Garrett's probably getting one of those assignments. Is there anybody else in the team that you think is a dark horse for that second two-way? Do you think it maybe goes somewhere else in the league? What do you think they're looking at the bare minimum with that spot?
Well, I mean, I know you just left Vegas, but the overwhelming favorite is Dicky Giroux. I mean, based on play, if you're picking the guy based on who's played the best over the past, whatever it is, 6 games, 7 games that we've played, it's Deke. The problem that I see is they both are not exactly the same players, but they're very similar in a lot of ways. And that doesn't mean that you couldn't use both of those spots on two similar defensive-minded guards that have quite a bit of holes in their offensive game, but it would be weird to me, I guess, that I know we have a very weak backcourt, especially in depth. But, you know, when you're looking at these other guys, nobody else necessarily stands out. The people that I would, you know, just for the sake of putting names out there for this argument, I would say RJ Nembhard, because he gives you a little bit more of a score, a little bit bigger guard, not as good defensively. I had DJ Stewart in that group, but he just has been so inconsistent I think I like him because he's a little bigger. I like him because he's a lefty. He's not as good defensively, and he's been very, very, very inconsistent. And, you know, beyond that, I mean, Javonte Smart, again, inconsistent offensively, hasn't really stood out to me as a point guard necessarily, better than anybody else. And, you know, from what I understand, Micah Potter, I guess, has a guarantee that he's going to be in Sioux Falls at the minimum. Like, he's going to training camp, and he's definitely going to be in Sioux Falls. I don't like him whatsoever. I'm okay with him being on Sioux Falls, but I just don't see the long-term fit of him. And I guess that's it. I mean, the McCoy guy off the bench is a big body, but I'm not just looking for a big body. Like, you can find those guys. So I don't know if you saw anybody else, what you think about this next group, if it's Jarreau or somebody else, but you know, I trust whatever they're going to do. If they find somebody else around the league, I would agree with that too.
I think it's Micah, or there's a cat. I think he plays for Charlotte. His name's Tilla. He's also a big stout guy that can grab a rebound aggressively and make something happen, but he's a drop defender. That second spot, I really think they're going to try and add just some kind of size and somebody who can play drop, if nothing else, just as a practice piece. And they just want to have another big body. Look, the two biggest issues with depth right now are wing and center, actual size at a big man position. So that's why I think it's going Micah. I know you hate that, but he just can, I guess, play drop as a big, and that's probably just all they're looking for right now, like the bare minimum. And he's in the facility. That's the only reason I think they're going that way. Personally, I would just like to take Stewart, just stash him, because he's that guy that if it can click, he's an NBA player. But man, you're right. He's so wildly inconsistent, and it's all of them are basically mirrors of themselves. It's the shot. The shot's always inconsistent with most of these guys. And surprisingly, Marcus Garrett has been okay, right? Like, that was always the knock on Garrett, is his form's a little weird and his shot's a little inconsistent, but he's taken that step. You need to give him the first one. And then, from there, I would hope they go Stewart, but they're not, because he's been bad. And that's what makes me think Micah.
And even Deke has shot it okay. I mean, better, if your expectation going in for both of them was like the floor, at least they've shown something in terms of making shots. Whether it was Garrett made a lot at the basket, he was kind of creative in the way that he finished. Two other guys that we didn't mention, you know, Drew Smith and Tyson Carter. Again, I just don't see, like, I see them along the same area as like Javonte Smart. Like, they've shown flashes. I'd like to see them in Sioux Falls, but I just don't see your two-way spots. The difference really, you know, for those of you that may not necessarily understand how this exactly works, the two-way spot essentially protects them. It's like you can use them for roughly 50 games in the NBA, but when they're in Sioux Falls in the G League, other teams can't just go grab them up. And so when you're just, you know, a guy in G League in Sioux Falls, you're under the Heat's umbrella, but you're not protected. You know, a team like when we got Kendrick Nunn from whatever the Warriors development program is over in, you know, in the Oakland area, that's the example. You know, they weren't protecting Kendrick on a two-way spot, or on, I think the Exhibit 10 even protects them a little bit. So, you know, that's the difference here. And, you know, it's one of those things that you only get two of them, but you want guys that we saw last year that can step in if need be, you know, if we have injury, if Gabe Vincent, let's say, just isn't working out, or Kasey Okpala is still on the roster, God forbid, and he's not working out, or you need center depth, like you mentioned, you know, you need these two-way guys to be able to step in for just, you know, emergency situations. Because if you're depending on two-way guys in your rotation, then I just don't think you're a contender. You're a pretender more than anything.
Yeah, and on this team with older veterans, any youth that you add has to be able to do a thing really well. If it's a big, they just have to be able to play drop defense and a rebound, because they'll have to do it for 8 minutes, right? Like, any two-way guy, the max he's getting is 8 to 12 minutes, and that's an emergency situation. So all the guys we're talking about have some kind of skill that can translate. Garrett has excellent on-ball defensive skills, right? His hands are always in the right position. He is a great job of using his physicality to disrupt drives. That translates. Omar's offensive skill translates. From there, it's about trusting the team, the developmental staff, to see a skill that maybe we don't see that can translate for 8 minutes.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I do sort of believe more in Garrett or Deke's defense. Like, if you had to play a game tomorrow, an NBA game, you know, us against the Milwaukee Bucks, and you had to play them for 6 to 8 minutes, I think their defense would translate more smoothly than Omer's offense. Just because I think he'd be in a different role. We're feeding him the ball. And I'm not just like necessarily just talking statistically. Obviously, he's not going to get 25 and 17 in his NBA debut. But the strength and physicality that he's going to go against is just going to get elevated up. And I keep getting myself into this. Like, I really like Omer. I like what he's shown, but I'm also very hesitant to buy all this stock in him in a way. I still think he has development to go through. And I think we're getting as a group of Heat fans really caught up into this Omer thing. And he's going to be a good player, I think. But we've had other guys that show this in summer league and then they don't pan out either. So I keep hesitantly pumping the brakes. Like, please don't get too caught up into this and think that he's going to play a big role this year. And if he pans out, I will eat my crow and I will be completely wrong, because I'm not against him, but I just don't see the immediate translation into the rotation.
I thought that it was pretty well understood, the Yurt 7 stuff, that, you know, we're just happy that we found another guy, you know, another piece that we can develop. But now I'm seeing entire articles being written about Omer and Bam starting together this year. And I got super nervous and I'm like, did I contribute to this problem? Because there is a distinction between wanting to support a guy because he seems like he could fit at some point at a cost controlled asset down the line, and really wanting that to work, because I really wanted that to work and I wanted them to sign Omer, versus me saying I want him to play significant minutes this year or minutes at all. I think a really successful season is one where Omer never touches a court this year.
Yeah. I mean, you think back to Bam's rookie year playing behind Hassan, played about 20 minutes a game. And he, at that time, he was 20 years old, so a little bit younger than Omer, averaged about 7 points, 5 rebounds a game. That I cannot imagine those minutes, points, or rebounds. You know, in statistically, it can be misleading. Let's say Omer plays in 5 games, and they're the 5 games at the end of the season that we're resting guys because we have the one seed, we're the best team in the NBA, and, you know, we've got everything locked up. So we're playing Omer with Strus and Gabe Vincent and whoever we trade Casey Akpala for alongside Haslam. Then his stats, you know, over 5 games may look really inflated. But if he plays, it just doesn't add up to me. And, you know, I hope long-term, I said it before, I think that he needs time in the G League to develop. He needs time in the NBA along these guys to develop. But I think it's a long stretch play versus an immediate contributor.
So you bring up a great, great transition. Let's get into, for the second week, our episode sponsor, Culture. Miami Culture is continuing in its 19th strong season. Udonis Haslam is back again under roster. The Culture Don himself, the king. UD, you feel a little vindicated, Sean?
I was so excited. And to frame it, if he would have announced that he retired, I would be excited for him. I wouldn't feel like, oh my God, how are we going to move forward without Haslam? Which is weird because of how, you know, how much we're propelling about what he does and how great his impact is. So when he retires, you're like, oh, okay, well, you know, we can move forward. But, you know, if you listen to the Long Shot Pod, I'm sure you have, if anyone that's listening has not listened to Long Shot Pod with Udonis, and it's about an hour long. And just the stuff that he says, the way that he explains things, the way that Duncan talks about him as, you know, his vet or his OG, you can hear, you can feel the impact that he has. And, you know, I know people have been interested in pushing him towards coaching. He flat out says no, like emphatically spells it out. I am not going into coaching, maybe ownership, but it's just not the role that he's going into. And, you know, I think me and you are on the same page in terms of his impact and his, you know, his future with the team, but it's one of those things that I think as long as he wants to play, you continue to let him come back.
It was exciting because it was a full sell to me from the organization top down that this team was going to be hard nosed and that they were going to play night in, night out, an aggressive style of defense, and that we had an identity. Udonis Haslem being on this team is proof that we have an identity. If we were a team with no direction, we didn't know what we were doing, and we're just trying to shove pieces together, I don't think we would use that roster spot on UD. We would need contributors. We would need to figure out pieces. But this gives me some hope that the squad knows how they want to play. It knows what kind of leaders it wants in place for the team to be successful. And Udonis Haslem factors into that equation. And as long as there is a piece of the equation for UD, I will throw him his 2.3, 2.7 million vet min every year. Because we talked about this last week. That impact can't be measured in dollars. It can't. It can't even be measured in a roster spot. His picture on those walls are going to last way more than he will in the NBA. He's just a symbol, a living symbol, and he's back for 19 years and needs to stay for one more, because if he retires on 19, my brain physically will not be able to stand it.
He's only got to get 20 as Kobe, 21 as Dirk. So for your sake, he'd have to get to 22, he'd be in his late 40s by that point. I mean, it's a pretty crazy number, but
stretching into LeBron playing with his son territory.
And Udonis is going to have a hard foul at the basket on Bronny with LeBron coming off the bench and Udonis and him fighting at the, you know, top of the key or something. That's going to be legendary in 2027.
How funny would it be if LeBron's legacy and the age and the way he stretches it entirely has Haslem in the shadow? He's just there the whole time.
That would be amazing. You know, and to shout out our sponsor, Culture, it's one of those things that we use that word a lot with Heat Twitter and being a Heat fan. You know, we have it on shirts and things like that. But, you know, you said the signing of Udonis puts our concept of culture to life. He embodies that. You look earlier in the week, or I guess last week now, Duncan Robinson signs that contract for $90 million. And the Heat has a surprise. His family's there to watch him or be with him when he signs that $90 million contract. There's a lot of things that the Heat do that other organizations don't. There's a lot of people that have been there since the inception of the franchise in the 80s that are still there today. You know, the Eric Reeds, there's a handful of guys that have been there from the beginning, not just the people that you know, but like people inside the arena, people that work in different departments. And it's real life. It's not something that's just BS that people throw out there. It's something that we do as a Heat organization differently than everyone else. And so that's why I feel like signing him is the embodiment of all that. You know, it's not just something that they throw out there as a concept or a slogan or something to sell shirts. It's fact, it's real life.
Well, my automatic pool cleaner is starting to appear out of the top of the pool and make a bunch of sounds on its last death throes. I think we're going to wrap this one up, man. This is a good episode for like no planning, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I know this week we didn't get one out. You were in Vegas and stuck in different various airports. And, you know, it's summer's coming to an end. So I have one more week working another week of basketball camp, and then I'm back to work. So kind of sucks on that aspect. But we'll be back starting, you know, this week. We'll probably have another episode this week, it sounds like. And, you know, into a more routine schedule as we get closer and closer to heat season starting in the fall. So it's exciting. We're getting done with Summer League. We'll have a few weeks of sort of that weird dead period as we try to patiently wait through football season to get to the heat season. But we'll be back with more thanks to our sponsor, Culture. And Tony, close us out, man.
You guys know where you can follow us.